Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog. This is Preview Spotlight number 194 for the January 2023 solicitations. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items in the upcoming solicitations that you might find interesting. Now, comics are a pre-order business, so whether we like it or not, it behooves us to take a look at what's going to be offered a couple of months out and let our retailers know so they can order appropriately. Now, these episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to promote the comics you love as often as you can. Now, there are thousands of items solicited every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle, or just fly beneath your radar. We'll be starting with the DC Connect catalog, followed by the Marvel's Previews catalog, and then working our way through the Diamond Previews catalog. Obviously, we aren't going to go item by item, or page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and those highlights are picked by people like you. So with that, let's get going. My first pick is the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Marvel Previews, and Diamond Previews. I find these incredibly helpful to find out what's coming out a few months from now and kind of plan my order appropriately. Sometimes there's stuff that sounds good on paper, but I look at the art, or something about the solicitation doesn't work for me, or there's something that I wouldn't have noticed unless, you know, the art had caught my eye, or the solicitation looks pretty cool, or something like that. Matter of fact, there have been a couple of times where I'll see something and realize I missed the first two issues or something like that and go order them. So just flipping through these catalogs is kind of my monthly equivalent of the old Sears Toys catalog when I was a kid of, you know, finding out what cool things were out there to be had and then making sure I got them as best I could. So whether you get the printed catalogs or not, this information is available online at the various websites for the distributors and the publishers and such. Comics are a pre-order business. It makes sense to know what's coming out so you can let your retailer know so they can have it so you can get it. So once again, my first pick is the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Marvel Previews, and Diamond Previews.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect special catalog. This is page 41 in that. I'm looking at Suicide Squad Dream Team number 1. Now, of course, you know Amanda Waller is going to be involved in this. The tagline at the top mentions, a new squad fights for DC's future and the next big step towards the cataclysmic event of 2024. And those who have been paying attention or have read some of the news headlines from the last year might know that the dawn of the DC universe had something to do with the Light making an appearance, and Amanda Waller's involvement is definitely going to be growing here in the next couple of months. But even just apart from that, this series looks like it'll be fun. The writer I'm not familiar with is Nicole Maines, but the art here is by Eddie Barrows and Eber Ferreira, one of my comic dream teams for sure. So nice to see them here on Suicide Squad Dream Team. It's listed as $3.99 and an ongoing, so hopefully this one goes for a little while. I imagine with it being tied in with things, they probably will wrap up their main story and then hope to continue it beyond that. It says, when Amanda Waller makes her move to seize ultimate power in the DCU, nothing will stand in her way, not even the future. Spinning out of the events of Titans Beast World comes the story of Dreamer, the precog Dreamwalker who has run afoul of the most power-hungry villain in DCU history. With a superpowered hero who can see the future on her side, is Waller's Suicide Squad finally unstoppable? Join Harley Quinn, Bizarro, Clock King, Black Alice, and Deadeye for the fight of DC for DCU's future and the next big step towards the cataclysmic event of 2024.
Just a quick comment on the writer of Suicide Squad Dream Team number 1, Nicole Maines. Nicole Maines played Dreamer in Supergirl and has written a Dreamer Bad Dream graphic novel and also a few things in some of the DC Pride stuff and a few other stories with Dreamer. I think it's kind of cool Nicole Maines is able to take the character of Dreamer from live action and control the character to a large degree in the comic book DC universe, I think it gives it a degree of kind of authenticity and stuff that's kind of cool. And Dreamer is a modern day antecedent to kind of the Dream Girl character from the Legion of Superheroes. It's a different character, but similar-ish backstory and slightly different power set and stuff. Anyways, Nicole Maines played Dreamer in Supergirl and is doing quite a bit of writing over at DC these days. More so than I would think almost anyone else who has portrayed a DC character in live action. I think there may be one or two others that have done it is voiceover work, like Michael Dorn having just done the Steel miniseries and such. But I still think Nicole Maines has probably already more pages written than Michael Dorn. I'm just not sure. Anyways, I just wanted to clarify who the writer was. And since Dreamer is going to be a key player in the story, having Nicole Maines as the writer, I think, is really cool.
This is Nick with a pick from the DC Connect catalog. This is page 4 in that catalog. I'm looking at Batman Dylan Dog number 1. Now, this is tying into an announcement that was several years ago. I think I saw something just recently, like maybe it was originally announced 5 or 6 years ago, of a team up between DC and an Italian publisher to do some crossovers. And this is the final result of it. It was first published in Italian and came out last year, the last part of it. Now it's being translated and published in English, hopefully a lot faster than its Italian release. But it is kind of a natural fit here. The character Dylan Dog deals with supernatural things, kind of a detective with fears and stuff like that, apparently. But here's what the solicitation has to say. Written by Roberto Riccioni, art by Gigi Cavanaugo and Werther Deledra. And this is $4.99 for each of these three issues. But this first issue here at least is 88 pages, so you're really getting a lot for your money. It's on sale March 12th, and it said, "See how the fates of Batman and Dylan Dog intertwined in the past through their lethal nemesis, the Joker, the Clown Prince of Crime of Gotham City, and Professor Zabarus, a mad genius with a taste for bringing the dead back to life. Joker is in London to seal a hellish pact with Dylan Dog's nemesis, the Mephistophelian Zabarus. The doorbell of Craven Road number 7 screams, and beyond the doorway Bruce Wayne appears. For the Nightmare Investigator, an incredible adventure begins side by side with the Dark Knight. They'll have to forge an uneasy alliance, putting aside the differences, in order to successfully confront and defeat an evil that comes from the past." Now, the art looks excellent. Many people will be familiar with Werther Deledra at this point from Something is Killing the Children. This was some of his art from a couple of years ago, probably started pre-pandemic. But I'm excited for this. I want to see how these two separate franchises are intertwined. And obviously, there's going to be Joker's crazy stuff going on in this. But always nice to see when one of the publishers lets another publisher have some fun with their property. This is Nick with another pick from the DC Connect catalog. From page 6, it's Batman Dark Age number 1. I only have to tell you two things about this to be completely sold on it. Writer Mark Russell, art Mike Allred. Now, if you need to know more beyond that, basically it's sort of the Spider-Man life story, or in this case, Superman space age type approach to telling the origin or early histories of characters as if they progressed through real time. And in this case, it said, "Meet Bruce Wayne, Gotham's favorite delinquent son, in an origin story like no other. Witness the boy become a dark knight shaped by a city in turmoil as it marches towards its prophesied doom. Set against the backdrop of actual historical events, Gotham comes alive, filled with the iconic characters who've loved and hated Batman over the years like you've never seen them before. Spinning out of the Eisner-nominated Superman Space Age, Mark Russell and Mike Allred return to give audiences a look at Batman as a figure in American history, fighting for justice in a world gone mad." So this is exciting anyway, just because of the Mike Allred art for sure. But these two do some excellent work, and I like to see them here together taking on Batman. There's a couple of pages of preview art on the next page of the catalog that look great. Mike and Laura Allred just can't be beat for, you know, their unique style of comic book art.
Hi, I'm Billy Hogan, host of the Superman Fan Podcast, and I go by Superman Fan on the forums. My first pick in the DC Comics Connect magazine is on page 14, with Batman Superman, World's Finest, number 25. Written by Mark Waid, and art and cover by Dan Mora and Steve Pugh, and this is the cover I'll be getting. Variant covers by Jamal Campbell, Dustin Nguyen, Dave Johnson, Joel Jones, and Alvaro Martinez Bueno. A William Shatner cameo cover is done by Dan Mora. A 1 in 25 variant cover by Christian Ward. And a 1 in 50 variant cover by Steven Subic. The cover price is $4.99 for 40 pages with the regular edition. And the cardstock variant covers are $5.99. And this issue is scheduled to go on sale March 19th. Join Batman and Superman as the World's Finest team celebrates 25 issues of World's Finest. This oversized special issue takes our heroes around the DCU and beyond, with a special lead story that will at last showcase the first meeting between the Joker and Lex Luthor. The World's Finest villains form an unholy alliance and will send chills down the spines of the DCU heroes forevermore. Plus, spinning out of the events of the World's Finest Annual, Doom Might strikes and points the way to the next World's Finest Epic. This issue reminds me of the very first Joker-Lex Luthor team-up in an issue of World's Finest in the 1960s, which I read in the Greatest Joker Stories Ever Told. And what a way to celebrate this series' 25th issue by teaming up Batman and Superman's greatest villains. Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on page 16 with Action Comics number 1063. Written by Jason Aaron and art and cover by John Timms, which is the cover I'll be getting. Variant covers are by Jorge Jimenez, Paolo Rivera, and R. Kikuo Johnson. There's also a 1 in 25 variant cover by Tom Riley, and the cover price for the regular edition is $4.99 for 40 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99. And this issue goes on sale March 12th. The startling finale of I, Bizarro sees the Man of Steel making his most shocking team-up ever as part of the mind-blowing final battle against the Ultimate Bizarro. I've always had a soft spot for Bizarro Superman ever since I got the 80-page giant issue of Superman dedicated to all Bizarro stories, so I can't wait to read the end of this storyline. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on the very next page of the DC Comics Connect issue, and that's Superman number 12, written by Joshua Williamson, art by David Baldion, cover by Jamal Campbell, which is the one I'll be getting, variant covers by Lee Bermejo and Clayton Henry, and a wraparound variant cover by Dan Jurgens and Norm Ratmund. And if I was into getting any variant covers, I would definitely get the wraparound cover because I love Dan Jurgens' art. There is a 1 in 25 variant cover by Ellen Qua, and the cover price for this issue is $4.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99. And this issue is scheduled to go on sale March 19th. Superman is the brains while Lex is the brawn as they team up to battle the Lex Luthor Revenge Squad for the fate of Metropolis. Lex has sworn to Superman that he is a changed man, but to what lengths will he go to stop his enemies? And what danger from deep space rapidly makes his way towards Earth? Any story that has Superman and Lex Luthor teaming up has to be a very interesting one, and I wonder if that threat from deep space might be Brainiac. I guess we'll find out in a couple of months.
Next up is Justice Society of America number 10 on page 25. This is written by Jeff Johns and art by Mikhail Janin, which is a terrific creative team. I just wish they were getting these out more often. This one is Rube, the child of the Red Lantern, kind of introduced over in the Alan Scott Green Lantern miniseries. She's still trying to find him, and that's setting her kind of off against the Justice Society of America. That's kind of cool. I'm curious about this Red Lantern, both father and daughter version from this and the Alan Scott Green Lantern. But what really has me excited is on the cover, we've got a couple of shots of different characters, and front and center is the character, I believe, is the Golden Age Legionnaire. We'd seen him at the end of one of the recent issues with a Legion flight ring. And I'm kind of wondering if this is an adult version of Pharaoh Lad, maybe the father of or grandfather of or something like that, potentially, or the twin brother of, and kind of how that's playing out. It's a very gray costume with a belt and what looks like the Pharaoh Lad mask. So that's my guess. I got zero to base it on other than the mask, so I'm curious. Anyways, I am enjoying Justice Society of America when it comes out. Hopefully they can get it back on track. It's only a 12-issue miniseries at this point. I'm hoping it continues beyond that, but we'll see. So once again, that's Justice Society of America number 10 on page 25.
This is Nick with another pick from the DC Connect catalog. This is from page 26. I'm looking at Shazam number 9, written by Mark Waid, art by Emanuela Lupacino. I'm sad that it's not Dan Mora, but she does pretty good, and I think their art style is similar enough that, you know, it should fit the property pretty well. It says, and this is $3.99 for 32 pages. It says, the captain has thwarted a cadre of space dinosaurs, talked the gods into being reasonable for 5 little minutes, and managed to look A-okay doing it. So what's left? Well, we creep. Yeah, we keep it on the down low. It's the fight of the century, the captain versus the creeper. Now, I didn't think I was going to see a TLC reference in the DC catalog this week. This month, but there it is. Now, I'm curious to see how the Creeper is going to be involved here, but put in Mark Waid's hands, I have no doubt. And again, I anticipate that this might be my favorite series continuing into the new year. This is Nick with another pick from the DC Connect catalog. This one makes me laugh. You all know by this point that I appreciate their seasonal or quarterly 80-page giant type things that they do. This one is the Ape Roll Special. Yeah, roll your eyes, of course. Written by John Layman, Joshua Hale, Fialkov, and Gene Yang. Art by Carl Mostert, Phil Hester, Bernard Chang for art. $5.99, 48 pages. This one is a little slimmer than some years, but the main cover here shows pretty much every monkey-themed character that DC could offer, all tossed onto one page. I'm sure it's going to be kind of crazy. It says, get ready to go bananas in this ape-ic adventure. Caution, an absurd amount of bad ape puns are incoming. Please be ape-vised. Gorilla Grodd's recent incarceration in the pages of The Flash has left a void that Monsieur Mala is more than happy to fill. Ape-sembling a group of the DCU's most sinister simians, Mala forms the Legion of with an eye toward world domination, but the world won't be conquered that easily. Enter the all-ape jungle league. Can this team of hero-eek anthropoids be the salvation we need? Or will Mala's team of maniacal monkeys bring forth the apocalypse? Get ready to go bananas as we honor DC's storied history with mankind's closest relatives in this epic adventure. It's going to be orangutastic, so heat up a cappuccino, prepare a batch of chocolate chip cookies, and get ready to read the one comic book this year that's guaranteed to make you go ape. Sorry. I hope I did enough justice trying to read that out loud.
Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on page 29 with Superman 78, The Metal Curtain No. 5, written by Robert Venditti, art and cover by Gavin Goodrin, variant cover by Michael Walsh, and a 1 in 25 variant cover by Janoy Lindsay. The cover price of the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $4.99. And this issue is scheduled to go on sale March 5th. After the massive battle at the White House, Superman is forced to turn to his sworn enemy, Lex Luthor, for help in his fight with Metallo. But what does the greatest criminal mind of our lifetime know about the Russian war machine? And just how will Superman use the info to take the fight to Metallo? Here's another interesting Lex Luthor-Superman team-up, and I love the fact that they're combining Metallo with the Cold War against the Russians in this miniseries set in the Richard Donner Superman movie universe.
Happy New Year, everyone. It's Chris Brawley, the Brawlinator, here with my picks for January. And for my first pick, I'm in the DC Connect. I'm looking on page 37 and going way back to the beautiful Bronze Age of comics. It's a DC facsimile edition of their treasury-sized limited collector's edition number 51, which collected Batman 232, 242, 43, and 44, totaling 76 pages, and this is hands down one of the greatest Batman stories of all time. And it is the heart of the original Ra's al Ghul saga from the early 70s, and it's brought to readers by the incredible talents of Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams, Irv Novik, and Dick Giordano. The Neil Adams cover alone warrants an enormous hardcover, and this is oversized just like the original in the 13 inches by 10 inch format. It's a full facsimile reprinting of the Bronze Age tabloid comic, and it features a wraparound cover by Neil Adams plus some great back matter from the era. I recently got the DC reprinted their Treasury edition of Superman vs. Wonder Woman. Now that was in hardcover. I cannot tell from this solicit if it's a hardcover or softcover, but they do have a foil variant cover for slightly more. So I'm kind of suspecting this might be a softcover. I kind of hope not, but I'm not sure. I may need to talk with Eric from Deep Discount Comics and ask for sure. But whatever it is, it's a great story. These are very cool. Check it out for yourself. It's over on page 37 of the DC Connect. It is the limited collector's edition number 51. Facsimile. There's also a comic facsimile on that same page with Ra's Ghul's daughter, Talia, her first appearance. And you might want to read it first. So if you've not read these stories, these are great. This kind of segues into the next book club doing Son of the Demon, classic Batman stories coming up soon. So join us on the book club. Consider picking this up. Again, it's over on page 37 of DC Connect.
My next pick is on page 43 of the DC Connect, and it is Batman Wayne Family Adventures Volume 4. Now, there's already been three volumes of this, not all of which made it into DC Connect, which I think is a miss on their part. And this is the first print version of the Webtoons series over at, you know, www.webtoons.com of Batman Wayne Family Adventures. They've done two, quote-unquote, seasons of this. They were releasing them every Thursday, and it was definitely formatted for the web where it's just a stacked series of panels you keep scrolling down. So when it goes into print, it's a little bit sometimes of a odd panel layout. Not odd, it just feels a little light. There's a lot of empty space on the page sometimes. It works perfectly fine, but it obviously wasn't geared to being printed out initially. It is soft cover 6x9 format. It's a $15 thing, but you get 208 pages. And they are collecting in this version episodes 71 through 116. And I don't know if they vary by length or not. It's kind of hard to judge on the web. These are fun stories of the Batman extended family with all the Robins, the Batgirls, Signal. Sometimes you get a few other characters, some of the Superman ones and some stuff like that. And they are clearly leaning on kind of the current slash iconic versions of the DC Universe. They're not, I think, strictly in continuity by any stretch of the imagination, but they're also more slice-of-life type stuff than superheroics, so it's not that they can't be in continuity either. But if you're looking for a lighter, I almost want to say more family-friendly take on the maybe quieter moments or whatever, not quieter moments, maybe it's a different look at the Batman family than we get in the comics. It's a little hard to describe because it does have some action adventure here and there. They do go solve crimes or whatever, but that's not kind of the focus of it. It's more the interpersonal relationships and stuff like that. So it's an interesting look at the Bat family and such. So I wish they'd done a better job of kind of covering these in the DC Connect for the previous volumes. I've got the first two. I've got the third on order. I'm definitely getting this. I've read them when they were coming out. So if you're really curious, really, just go to webtoons.com, look up Batman Wayne Family Adventures, read a couple, see if it works for you or not, because it's got a different kind of sensibility than a lot of the comics have, but in a way that kind of works. So, once again, that's Batman Wayne Family Adventures Volume 4 on page 43 of the DC Connect.
Hey, this is James back with my next pick, and this time I'm in the main previews catalog. I'm on page 127, which is the image section, even though I know there's an image PDF. I only call out things that are in the catalog, so it's in the previews catalog. It's the image section. And we have a new comic by Tony Fleeks is the writer. The artist is Trish Foster and Tone Rodriguez. Not Tony, but maybe it's Tony. T-O-N-E. Tone or Tony. I don't know. And it is called Feral. Feral, it looks like it's a cat on the cover. I have a couple feral cats myself. I'll tell you the little story about my cats, which will be funny maybe to you guys. It's a gem of the month. Now, the reason why I'm calling this out is John and I reviewed a book by Tony Fleeks about dogs, and we thought it was a fantastic read. We both really enjoyed it. And so here's our opportunity to pick up another Tony Fleeks animal book, but with a cat. And I'm a dog guy. I kind of grew up with dogs, but I become a cat guy because I married a cat lover, and now I love my cats. But let me read you the solicit, and then I'll tell you about my cats, which will be kind of an interesting story. Okay, it says, a new horror, and horror, when it's horror, it's not that scary, from the creators of Stray Dogs. Stray Dogs was a series that John and I reviewed, and we really enjoyed. Meet Elsie, Lord Fluffy Britches, and Patch, three indoor cats lost in the not-so-great outdoors during a nightmarish rabies outbreak. Without their human to protect them, the cats rush to find their way home before they're eaten by the forest full of rabid beasts on their trails. Don't get bit, don't get scratched, don't become feral. And the good thing is it's only $3.99 for 32 pages, which is nice in this day and age. Just so you know, I do have a couple feral cats. We had some kittens that were born in our backyard. This is back like 12, 13 years ago, probably 13 years ago now. We had some bushes out back in a house that was kind of next to us. It was sitting there for a while, and it got kind of overgrown in their backyard, and a stray cat had some kittens out there. Stray cat, I'm assuming the mom got caught. We saw the babies running around one day out in the backyard. They were probably 4 weeks old, little tiny things jumping around. And luckily, no hawks got them, because we do have a lot of hawks in our neighborhood. I saw a hawk grab a snake out of my front yard. But we kind of saved them, bottle-fed them, kept them for a long time. We regret that we did not keep all the kittens, because there were six of them. But we did keep two of them. The other four got adopted. But to this day, we kind of regret that we didn't keep all six. But those two, their names are Chai and Greyjoy, both girls. And they are our ferals. Greyjoy is literally kind of feral. Anyone else besides us comes to the house, she kind of runs away and hides. She's terrified of people. They're both kind of afraid of people. It's just funny. So this comic spoke to me. Tony Fleeks was a great writer. He did a great thing with Stray Dogs. I'm definitely on board with this. And who knows, if we, John and I like it, we may review it. We'll see. On to my next pick.
My next pick is on page 33 of the Image catalog, and it is Astro City Metro Book number 5. Now, obviously, I'm a big fan of Astro City. We're doing Astro City Spotlights. It'll take us a while to get to this point, because we're still, I think, working our way through the first Metro book. But I've been a big fan of Astro City since it started. I think it's really well done.
Kurt Busiek, Brent Anderson, Alex Ross have just done a terrific job. Kurt's doing the writing, Brent's doing the art, Alex does the covers and a lot of the character designs. And this has 536 pages. It's a $35 soft cover. I think it's well worth getting. And they've got enough material for one more of these before they hit the That Was Then, This Is Now special, which would fall into like the very beginning of a seventh Metro book. But that presumes they actually get around to releasing the story that was teasing, and I'm hoping that's coming up. So once again, that's Astro City Metro Book Volume 5, trade paperback on page 33 of the Image catalog.
This is Nick with a pick from the main previews catalog. This is from page 133 in the abbreviated Image section they've got there. Ice Cream Man number 39. Now, I'm recording this clip for John's benefit because I know he's not too much a fan of this series or these style of books, but the solicitation text here will definitely not sell him on it. The writer here is W. Maxwell Prince. Artist is Martin Marazzo, Chris O'Halloran, and the title for this particular issue, well, first I should say the main cover here shows a car wreck that's ongoing. Now, the title is Decompression in a Wreck, Part 1. In this first part of a two-parter, which does not require reading of either part, we know how slow time can go when your bumper is making its way toward your trunk. This has mature themes, 32 pages, $3.99. I did actually mean to mention this here. On social media the other day, I saw where Martin Marazzo was highlighting the fact he realized he had just inked his 1,000th page of this series of Ice Cream Man. So I think with its start and stops and gaps and all that, we didn't know if the series would keep going. But it is pretty neat to see this kind of bizarre horror anthology book have lasted that long. So congratulations to them for making it 1,000 pages so far into their series.
My next pick is on page 14 of the Marvel Previews, and it is Ms. Marvel Mutant Menace number 1 of 4. I've been enjoying what they've been doing recently with the Ms. Marvel character, kind of almost, let's say, shoehorning her into the X-Men franchise. It works. It's a fun character. What really got me intrigued by this is Iman Vellani, who plays Ms. Marvel in the MCU, is the co-writer here. And I saw an interview with her on Seth Meyers' late night show, and she is taking the job seriously. She read up on the X-Men stuff. She obviously knows the character of Ms. Marvel. She's got a definite passion for this, so I think it's really cool to see one of the people who is portraying a live-action version of a character actually learn about the comic version and write about the comic version of the character. So this should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I've been enjoying what they've been doing with the X titles in general. I dipped out of Ms. Marvel for a bit around the Kamala's Law and that whole bit right around the time of the pandemic. But I'm dipping my toe back in with the character and stuff. Read the first miniseries she co-wrote. I thought it was good, and I'm looking forward to where they go with this. So once again, that's Ms. Marvel, Mutant Menace number 1 of 4 on page 14 of the Marvel Previews.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the January previews. And actually, I'm not starting in DC this time. I didn't find anything there that really I felt like I needed to call out. So I'm over in the Marvel supplemental on page 20. And the first thing I noticed that I wanted to call out, it's Symbiote Spider-Man 2099, number 1 of 5. And the reason why I'm interested in this one, not because I'm into symbiotes, because I'm kind of over it, but it's Peter David. He's doing one of his 5-issue miniseries. Most of the time lately when I've been reading miniseries, they've been pretty horrible. I've gotten burned on them. I was telling John I'm pretty much over a lot of the miniseries because you pre-order 1, 2, sometimes 3 issues before you know if you really like the thing. And then you feel like you're in too deep, like you can't really cancel. You might as well just see it through. But Peter David, he has been doing a fantastic job, whether it's his Spider-Man or his Hulk 5-issue miniseries. And that's because of the writer. He really does a terrific job, and I'm hoping this one's another terrific one. I know he had some health problems, and it didn't have any comic's coming out for a little while, but he's back and he's writing this, so I'm definitely going to be picking it up. And it says, Peter David returns to the symbiote Spider-Man saga. So what is this five-issue miniseries about? I'll read you the solicit. Oh, by the way, the one thing that I don't like about this comic is, since it's one of five, it is mostly, it's $4.99. So that seems to be the going price for comics today. And John and I will be answering that in the Q&A that we're going to be doing. But it seems like all comics are just $4.99 now. So just that's the thing I don't like. Okay, Peter David returns to the symbiote Spider-Man saga. Set your time circuits ahead to the techno-dystopian future of 2099. Comic legend Peter David from The Incredible Hulk, Symbiote Spider-Man, and Spider-Man 29 triumphantly returns to pin the next epic chapter in Symbiote Spider-Man saga alongside artist Rohe Antonio from Carnage. My first experience with him, because I'm not reading Carnage. Set your time circuits ahead to the techno-dystopian future of 2099. Miguel O'Hara, a.k.a. Spider-Man 2099, is facing a hostile takeover of his own body, Kron Stone, the Venom of 2099, wages an all-out assault on Alchemex, and the only hope of stopping him lies with this power awakened by a top-secret project gone terribly wrong. What must Miguel sacrifice to steal the bond with his new symbiote, his body, his mind, his very soul? Like I said, it's kind of interesting because most of the time I steer clear of everything symbiote-related, but you put Peter David on it, and it's a five-issue miniseries, I'm definitely going to give it a shot. So I'm in on this, and on to my next pick.
Hey, it's Brawlinator again, and if you are on the comic book page Slack channel, you know there is a contingency of fans of Peter David. In fact, we held a series of virtual book clubs that went through three volumes of Peter David's Hulk run. So I was delighted to see that David and Rohe and Antonio were teaming up for Symbiote Spider-Man 2099. It's another five-issue series set in the year 2099. Now, David's last series, where he revisited a classic character that he had done a great run on, was Joe Fixit. We got that trade paperback release back in July, and this might echo what he did in his Symbiote Spider-Man back in 2019, where he revisited the symbiote period of Spider-Man's career, just between getting the suit in Secret Wars, but before Peter Parker discovered the costume's sinister secrets. I think that was the alien costume saga. Now David is returning to another era that he made into a fan favorite, which was his run on Spider-Man 2099 with Miguel O'Hara as Spider-Man in the far-flung future. This is another one of Marvel Comics' retro series, revisiting these milestone runs and series. Joining him on this series is, again, Rohe Antonio. I think that's how you say it. He did, his most recent work was over on Carnage. Now, this five-issue series, as I said, is going to take you sort of back to the future world of Marvel 2099, and Miguel O'Hara becomes the host of the terrifying Venom symbiote. Sounds like a lot of fun. Peter David's an exceptional writer. I'm sure he would love to see some numbers on the board for sales. Check this out on page 20 in the Marvel Previews Supplemental. Symbiote Spider-Man 2099. I have no doubt this will be good.
Hey, this is James back with my next pick in the Marvel Supplemental, and now I'm over on page 67, where we have one of the 20th Century Fox, or 20th Century Studios, I guess I should say, properties, which is now owned by Disney. Beware the Planet of the Apes, number 3. The writer on this is Mark Guggenheim. Alvaro Lopez is the artist. The reason why, and $3.99, which is nice. It's a little bit cheaper comic. I already read the first one that came out as I'm recording this. This series is fantastic. All of the Planet of the Apes series have been good. They've been better than the Predator and Alien series by far, in my opinion, which are the other 20th Century Studios properties. The first one took place kind of like, you could say, modern day Planet of the Apes, the Ape Uprising. And when I say modern day, the movies that we saw recently, the remakes. This one takes place back in the 1979 movie. So we're going back in time. But it is not a retelling of the movie. This is completely new material. And it says that all new series set in the original era, you know, in a little box off to the side. But it was fantastic because instead of just seeing, you know, I think it was Charlton Heston, I honestly can't remember. they called him Bright Eyes, you know, he lost his voice and everything like that, the human. And then there was Dark Eyes, the girl that was with him, that he, the love interest. You see him with the two chimps, and I can't remember, I think their name are Cornelius and Zira. Those are their names. So you see them with the two chimps who are kind of helping the humans, you know, not really with the military powers, who are, you know, like suppressing them and treating us like pests. And they lose one of their nephews, and the nephew goes, disappears into the Forbidden Zone. Now, inside the Forbidden Zone in the movies, that's where, you know, you found the Statue of Liberty. But there's a lot of world building, because in the first issue of the comic, you got kind of a map of the world, which we've never really seen a map of the world. At least I haven't seen a map of the world. Maybe someone else has. And so with that map of the world, you're going to the Forbidden Zone. There's a lot more things. And there's even hints of, in that map, a large human civilization, which you don't see in the 1970s movie. So I think this is really clever. In the first comic, you see new ruins of human society that we never saw in the movie. So there's a lot of world building. I thought it was just excellent, really cool. So this is the third issue. Reach out to Eric over at Deep Discount Comics. He might be able to still get issues 1 and 2 for you, but issue 2 may be on his FOC. He sends out the final order cutoff list, and so you can add it onto your order and then see if you can get issue 1, because this is just fantastic stuff. I really like it. Hey, and if you missed it, you can always pick up the trade. On to my next recording. Hey, this is James back with another pick in the Marvel Supplemental. This will be my final pick in the Marvel Supplemental. And I'm over on page 81, where I'm looking at Spider-Man Brand New Day Omnibus Volume 1 hardcover. This is, so it's Volume 1, so there's going to be additional volumes. It is a collection by, it was a ton of creative teams that wrote Brand New Day. So just to give you an idea of it, it says written by Dan Slott, Mark Guggenheim, Bob Gale, Zeb Wells, boo for Zeb Wells just because his current Spider-Man has not been good, Mark Waid, Joe Kelly, Roger Storen, Brian Reed, Matt Fraction, and Stuart Moore, and penciled by everyone and their brother. So basically, it was a creative project with a lot of creators on there. It was really cool. This one is going to be 1,272 pages, so it's just shy of 1,300 pages, and it's $125. Now, you will be getting about 42% off if you get it through Eric over at Deep Discount Comics. That's where I buy them, because I need that discount. And it collects a ton of stuff, like Free Comic Book Day 2007 Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 1999 number 546 through 583, annuals. I'm not going to reach all this stuff. There's just a ton of material that's collected in here. But if you're a fan of Brand New Day, and I know there's a lot of people who enjoyed it and talk about it in the Slack channel and on the forums, believe it or not, this is your chance to pick it up in an omnibus format. And I really do like the omnibus format. So check it out. If you want to dip into this material, I'm picking it up. On to my next pick.
Brawlinator again, and I'm on page 84, still in the Marvel Supplemental, and I'm looking at this X-Factor Omnibus. I loved this title when it debuted way back in 1986. I stuck with it for several years. It all began in Fantastic Four 286, though, which was written and illustrated by John Byrne. And I gotta say, that issue is a must-read for X-Factor and really Marvel fans in general. That crucial issue resurrected Jean Grey after her epic death at the end of the Dark Phoenix saga, and that issue is included in this omnibus, not just because it was one of the most significant comic book retcons of all time, it showed that Jean Grey was never the Phoenix, but because it was instrumental in reuniting the original five X-Men members to establish X-Factor in their own series, reteaming those original X-Men, that original lineup of Cyclops, Marvel Girl, Iceman, Archangel, and Beast. It's really one of the best ever teams, honestly. Writer Bob Layton and artist Jackson Geiss reestablish the team as a government-based force, a concept that would prove crucial not only to the title's future, but also the Marvel Universe as a whole, as shown in epics like the Civil War crossover event. Now, this omnibus collects Avengers 263, Fantastic Four 286, as I mentioned earlier, X-Factor 1 through 26, the first two annuals, Iron Man Annual 8, Spider-Man 282, and over a dozen more random issues and crossovers. But this has it all, from the first appearance of Apocalypse to the lead-in to the Mutant Massacre, and even Angel being changed into Archangel. It's good stuff. I highly recommend it. Check it out over on page 84 of the Marvel Previews. It's the X-Factor Omnibus.
My next picks are on page 119 of the Marvel Previews, and I really, really recommend you guys check out this page. It's the Marvel Checklist page every month near the back of the catalog. Now, for me, the items I'm going to be getting are Avengers 12, Captain America number 8, Doctor Strange 14, Superior Spider-Man 6, and X-Men 33, all of which will be in next month's Marvel Previews catalog. And it really annoys me that they're doing that because I'm essentially having to order these things kind of sight unseen. If they're going to be in the next catalog, don't kind of sneak them in here on this order form. Marvel's been doing this way too much lately, and if you pay attention as you flip through it, there are a lot of items in this catalog this month that have a, yeah, use last month's order code, and I really think they need to sync that up. So my point here is not what I'm going to be getting off this page, but that you should look at this page and figure out what you would be getting off this page so you can go ahead and pre-order it now if you want to. Otherwise, you're going to look at the catalog next month and you're going to see Captain America 8 or Avengers 12 or, you know, whatever, and realize it was using last month's order code, which might make it a little harder to pre-order if you need to. So once again, Marvel's got some advanced solicitations snuck in here, and I just wanted to make sure you guys were aware.
This is Nick with a pick from the main previews catalog. This is from Boom Studios on page number 50. Now, there's an unusual number of pet-themed comics that are coming out. Like, several of them are being launched just this catalog. This is Man's Best, number 1 of 5, written by Pornsack Pichichote and illustrated by Jesse Lonergan. It's $4.99 for 32 pages, which I ordinarily probably wouldn't recommend in this case, but I'm a fan of Jesse Lonergan's art, and I'm going to recommend it. It says, Homeward Bound on an Alien Planet. Man's Best follows 3 emotional support pets living on the starship Horizon, a spacecraft searching for a new planet to house a humanity compromised by bad decisions and corporate corruption. But after the ship crashes and their crew is captured, these loyal pets are their owner's only hope. Outfitted in outrageous mech suits, these 3 best friends must traverse a hostile world to rescue their owners, leaving them the only hope for a humanity that might not be worth saving in an adventure threatening to tear their friendship apart. Man, that's a lot that they've packed into a 5-issue series. Anyway, Pornsack Pichichote was the writer of the Eisner and Harvey Award-winning The Good Asian, and Jesse Lonergan has been doing art for his own published comic Hedra that came out a couple years ago, as well as recent Miss Truesdale and The Fall of Hyperborea. Check it out. There are some previous pages here that you can see. I'd say for him, it's probably a little bit of an updating of his style. It looks a little bit more not realistic, really, but the figures look more what you would expect them to. He had been doing a lot that was very experimental, but this has kind of a nice cartoonish quality that I do like. Check it out. Coming out in March.
It's Brawlinator again. I'm on page 140 in the previews catalog looking at Titan Comics' The Don Coppola graphic novel, which chronicles the life of the Godfather's Francis Ford Coppola. Titan's synopsis reads, based on the life and films of an acclaimed cinema icon, this book focuses on the legendary Francis Ford Coppola of the Godfather fame. Following the story of the man behind the movie, Don Coppola shows the insight behind the critically acclaimed director Francis Ford Coppola and takes a look at both the impact of his movies and his life from a cinematic narrative. Now, I love Coppola's work. If you have Paramount Plus, I highly, highly, highly recommend you watch The Offer, a 10-episode series that covered the creation of bringing The Godfather from script, from the book, actually, all the way to screen. It's incredible. It's very well done. I love Coppola's work. He's done more than just The Godfather, but obviously that's what he's most well known for. I know that Titan also did a previous installment like this for Quentin Tarantino, which I missed. I don't intend to miss this one. I'm also going to pick this up for a friend of mine who is a huge Coppola fan. And he actually helps us when we do crowdfund comics over at my studio. He's the guy that helps with fulfillment. He's never really been into comics, but I bet he would get into this one. Anyhow, it's a must-buy for me. I hope you'll check it out for yourself. It's over on pages 140 and 141, so you could see some preview pages. Don Coppola from Titan Comics.
Hey, this is James back with my next pick, and this time I'm in the Titan section, and I'm on page 142 with, surprise, surprise, a gem of the month, Conan the Barbarian number 9. It is an ongoing series. It is written by Jim Zub. Art is by Roberto De La Torre. I will tell you, this has been a fantastic series. I have loved almost every issue. Almost every issue is an A or A+. There's been one that was like a B+ for me. This is just great new Conan stories. And if you missed out, you really should think about checking back in and getting back on the series. It's that good. And they give you a little recap at the front of the book so you can get caught up. So if you missed the first 8 issues, you can jump in here on issue 9 and know what's going on. But it says on issue 9, beyond flesh, beyond death, beyond time, Conan has traveled far and seen much in his legendary journeys, but nothing he's experienced thus far can prepare him for a quest to lands beyond to answer dark riddles of the past. Unexpected allies await, fierce enemies loom, and the strange power of the Black Stone stirs in the age unconquered. By the way, that Black Stone was a key element in the first 2 arcs, so we're still dealing with the Black Stone. Read it, listen to me talk about it in the monthly spotlight, you'll hear me talking about it. The interior art is fantastic, the writing is fantastic, everything is fantastic. You have to read this Conan. Now, I will tell you, I'm not doing multiple clips, but if you flip over the pages to page 144 and 146 in the previous catalog, there's solicits for both Conan the Barbarian, the original Marvel Comics volume number 1, Omnibus, and also the Savage Sword of Conan, the original Comics Omnibus volume 1. So these are reprints of that original Marvel material. I picked it up when the Omnibuy were coming out by Marvel, so I won't be picking these up. I won't be double dipping because I already have this material, but it is just fantastic, especially the Savage Sword of Conan, just terrific, terrific stuff. I will tell you that they're also at the same time publishing new Omnibuy where Marvel dropped the ball and left off with the Savage Sword of Conan on the Omnibus side, and I am picking those up from Titan. So Titan's been doing a terrific job. I'm very happy with that, with what they've been doing. I was worried when it was leaving Marvel. Dark Horse did some good series, but they had some so-so and not-so-good series. Titan, so far, with this first series, has just done a fantastic job. I can't recommend it highly enough. On to my next pick.
It's Brawlinator again, and my next pick might not be for everyone. It's over on page 181 in previews, and it's called Torpedo 1972, and it's from Ablaze Comics. I bring this up because we recently read Moonshine from Image Comics in the virtual book club, and this is the same artist, Eduardo Risso, who also is well known for 100 Bullets. It's also set roughly in the same era as Moonshine. Let me share the solicit. In 1930s, Lucas Torelli, known as Torpedo, was a legend of the suburbs of New York, a tough, trigger-happy Sicilian who only knew how to make friends. Anyone else is no longer here to say otherwise. Nearly 40 years later, the Big Apple has changed quite a bit. Torpedo, not so much. As a persistent journalist prepares to write an article about the Caputo family, the demons of Torpedo's past resurface along with his dirty old habits. This sounds like it might be good, and I love Risso's art style. Check this out yourself. It's over on page 181, and if you feel the same, maybe you should check it out too. Torpedo 1972, number 1, from Ablaze Comics.
My next pick is on page 214 of the previews catalog, and it's Dudley Datson, number 1. It's written by Scott Snyder, art by Jamal Igel, which is a pretty good creative team, and it's about a boy, his dog, and a machine that controls time and space. And I think this was originally a Comixology original. I'm not sure about that, though, but it looks fun. The cover art they show, which is by Jamal Igel, of course, looks great. So I'm going to try this out. Hopefully I'll like it. So once again,
That's Dudley Datson, number one, on page 214 of the previews catalog.
Billy Hogan again. My final pick in this month's previews is on page 217 with Usagi Yojimbo, Crow number one. Finally making it out of the frozen mountains, Usagi and Yukichi come across a merchant being attacked by four brigands. They rescue the supposed merchant, only to discover much later that he is really a criminal with a huge bounty on his head. Of course, wherever there is a huge reward, you can find bounty hunters Jin and Stray Dog, and other unscrupulous trackers. This issue is written by, as always, the writer, cover, and story artist Stan Sakai, and this issue is scheduled to be published on April 3rd for the cover price of $4.99. I enjoy reading Usagi Yojimbo because it gives us a look at the history of the samurai period of Japanese history, as well as showing us some of the customs and folklore of Japanese culture of that era. I enjoy reading Usagi Yojimbo so much that when I get my issues from Discount Comic Book Service, that I put Usagi Yojimbo at or near the bottom of the pile because I like saving the comic book I'm looking forward to reading the most for last. As always, thank you, John, for providing this forum so that we can all share our enthusiasm for the comic book medium. And I want to thank all the other contributors because I always enjoy listening to what everyone else is planning to order to read in each issue of previews.
Hey, this is James back with another pick in the previews catalog, and this time I'm over on page 232, where I am in the publisher called Alien Books, who has taken over the Valiant Comics. So they've taken over the licensing. I don't know if they own them outright. I know it was written up, but I don't want to go look up the story and find out exactly how it played out right now while we're recording. They kind of finished up some of the books that Valiant kind of dropped the ball with as Valiant went unceremoniously out of business. And over here, you know, just to let you know, they do have a new Bloodshot Reloaded, Unleashed. They have a Live Wire. It's coming out. So they have, like, one-shots. They have some hardcovers from the Valiant Universe. But the one that kind of really sparked my interest is a series that I did like before. It was called Britannia. This one's called Britannia, The Great Fire of Rome. Now, I think they're just dipping, this publisher, Alien Book, is just dipping their toes into the water or their feet into the water to see how much interest is there, or just trying something completely new. Britannia, when it first came out, it was an investigative, a guy who lives in Rome during the days of the Roman Empire, and he didn't live in Rome, but he was of the Roman Empire, and he's an investigator, so a Sherlock Holmes type, and they brought him to Britannia to investigate things that were going on. I read this years ago. Now we have him investigating the Great Fire of Rome, which I think could be cool. It's written by Peter Milligan, art by Alvaro Papagiani, I guess. And it says, return to ancient Rome with a great detector Antonius Axa. While Rome is aflame, Nero fiddles, and Axia is set to find out who started the great fire. What's up with all the strangers in town and what they have to do with any of it? Now, the one thing that is weird is I guess it's going to be a really big comic or possibly a trade. I don't know. It's 64 pages, which is large. But it's $12.99. That price is pretty darn large. But they're doing these big oversized things. Like, even over on the next page, the Bloodshot, it's 48 pages and $9.99. Is it worth it? I don't know. This could be really good. I'm thinking about just trying out one of them to see how it goes. But it says, you know, down at the bottom, you know, it's going on and on. It says square bound and with foil on the cover. I don't give a you-know-what, a rat's blank about a foil cover. I wish they would save the foil cover and knock $2 off the price, because I really don't care about foil covers. But this looks really cool, and I did like the first series, so I'm really thinking strongly about dipping in. And this is a one-shot, so it's one thing that I can buy, read a complete story, maybe enjoy it, and I'm done, which could be nice. By the way, the Bloodshot one, that's $9.99, it's book one of two. But instead of buying six or eight issues spread out over months and months and months, and then who knows if the publisher goes out of business, you buy two comics and you're done and you have the whole series, the whole mini series. So it's a new experiment. We'll see how it goes, but I'm going to test the waters with Britannia. On to my next pick. Hey, this is James here with my next pick in the previews catalog, and this time I'm on page 246 with Antarctic Press. And over with Antarctic Press, surprise, surprise, we have a comic that, believe it or not, I already own, and I already, it's in my hands. This is The Thin Blue Line. Story is written by Mike Barron. Art is by Joseph Arnold and Jeff Slemons. And the reason why I know about it is Brawlinator, Chris Brawley from the Slack channel, also from our book club. He's a guy I've gotten to know over the years. And Chris is a great guy. He's funny. He's surly. But once you get to know him, he's a generally nice guy. That's just his personality and who he is. But he's been helping Mike Barron with getting comics published and some other creators, which was kind of cool. And so he's learned a lot about the process and how comics are created and timelines and getting everything together. And they even have a website with their Kickstarter or Indiegogo projects as they come out. And then they eventually end up in our previous catalog, and here it is. So if you have not read this, I can't recommend it enough. The Thin Blue Line, it's a police book. It says, in the middle of a long, hot summer, a fatal police shooting makes national news. Cities from across the country erupt into violence, as well as organized activist groups mix in with opportunists and provocateurs and begin to riot and loot, burn and kill. One rookie cop is caught in the middle and is forced to choose between protecting her daughter and serving her community. Will she survive the chaos? So it looks pretty cool to me. It's 56 pages. It's a one-shot. And this is the whole series. It's $9.99. So if you haven't read it, that you definitely want to pick this up. If you have read it already, pick it up and support someone in our Slack channel. It would be kind of a cool thing. And good luck to you, Chris, and Mike Barron, and everyone out there over at Antarctic Press for getting this done. On to my next pick.
Brawlinator again, and I'm on my final pick. Looking at page 246 in the main previews catalog, it's a gripping story about a single mom who is also a police officer dealing with a weekend of citywide rioting. Called Thin Blue Line, and yours truly was the editor on this book, which we self-published via crowdfunding back in 2022. At the time, none of the comic publishers that I solicited to would touch it. Some even had some very salty responses. But last year, I'm proud to say that Antarctic Press expressed interest in doing a standard comic book edition of this graphic novel. We had done a premium square bound, but they wanted to do a regular comic, but a thick one at 64 pages. And now the dream has become a reality, and Thin Blue Line is coming to comic shops this March. The solicit reads, in the middle of a long, hot summer, a fatal police shooting makes national news. Cities across the country erupt into violence as well-organized activist groups mix in with opportunists and provocateurs and begin to riot, loot, burn, and even kill. One rookie cop is caught in the middle and is forced to choose between protecting her daughter and serving her community. Will she survive the chaos? Now, this is a touching story. It's not a police recruitment book. And it really shows, I think, both sides of policing and highlights family, loyalty, and keeping calm in tough situations. Now, the artist is an active duty cop and an 82nd Airborne veteran, and it's written by Eisner winner Mike Barron. That Sergio Cariello cover is the cheaper edition of these two, but the Butch Geist cover is also a favorite of mine. I hope listeners will ask your comic shop to get one for you, or a cop you may know, or really order a dozen for their shop. That's just me being me. And that is it for me. Thanks again to John, James, Sam, Eric, Kay, and everyone else that helps make the Comic Book Page podcast and this Slack channel possible. I think it's a great community. I encourage others to join in the discussions. Hey, why don't you grab that previews catalog coming out in a couple of weeks and start planning to record your own solicitations for the next previews spotlight. Hope everybody is ready to have a good year for 2024, and I look forward to hearing your selections for this month. Thanks.
This is Nick with a pick from the main previews catalog. This is page 260 in the AWA section. Interestingly, this is the second month in a row I've been enticed by something from AWA. One of my hopes and dreams for the new year that I sent in for the year-end spotlight was I want to see more westerns and crime dramas, and I think we get a little bit of both of those here. This series is written by Jeff McComsey and illustrated by Philippe Cunha, C-U-N-H-A. It says, don't miss the start of this hard-boiled neo-western thriller. In this explosive new thriller by writer Jeff McComsey and artist Philippe Cunha, Cole, a straight arrow handyman, finds himself in the crosshairs of a ruthless crime syndicate along with his pregnant wife. But what is the meaning of the little black book of underworld contacts Cole's deceased father had hidden in his home? Cole's father believed the best thing he could do for his son was to stay out of his life. But does the apple fall far from the tree? $3.99 on sale March 13th. Says mature readers, 32 pages. And in the Next Phase catalog, you can see some of the preview pages listed there. Otherwise, from the main previews catalog, you're going to have to scan a QR code.
Hey, this is James back with my next pick in the previews catalog. And this time I'm over... It's interesting. Okay, the solicit that I'm going to call out is on page 294. But just to let you know, they're the publisher's distillery. On 290, they have a brand new comic called White Boat from Scott Snyder. It's kind of like a mega yacht horror thing. Tempting. Very tempting. Who knows if I pick all these up? They're very pricey. That's why I'm really debating. On the next page, they have Spectrograph by James Tynion and Christian Ward. He's another great horror story. But the one that I wanted to pick, because I liked all three of these, but the one that's a little bit different, and we don't get enough comics in this genre, I feel like, on page 294 by Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso is the artist. The Blood Brothers Mother, number one. These things that come out from distillery are magazines, 48-page magazines, so those big things. Think of the big magazines that you get from Black Label when DC does those. So it's $8.99. They're more expensive. Great. But I'm hoping this one's worth it. They have a little QR code that you can scan where you can get preview images and pages. And it looked interesting to me. This is a Western. So it's definitely something you don't see very much of today. So it's saying a new series debut from the team behind 100 Bullets. In the Old West, three children set off across the wild Texas frontier to rescue their mother, kidnapped by ruthless outlaws who gunned down their preacher father. Throughout their journeys, they'll face the harsh elements and unforgiving landscape, deadly animals, hungry for blood, merciless bounty hunters, and so much more, all in relentless quest to rescue their family. They'll learn the terrible cost of revenge, not just in lives, but in how it stains a soul. While revenge may be satisfying in the moment, it leaves a yearning behind that lasts a lifetime. And once you taste it, nothing else is ever so sweet. In the tradition of the Searchers of Blood Meridian comes a brutal new Western series from the Eisner Award-winning team behind 100 Bullets and Moonshine. And Moonshine and 100 Bullets were both fantastic, so I'm on board for this. Let's go. Give me a good Western. On to my next pick.
This is Nick with a pick from the main previews catalog. Now, I'm highlighting this in good conscience. I can't recommend it for several reasons. But if you are intrigued enough, you may want to check this out. It is The Blood Brothers Mother Number 1 by Distillery. That's the D-S-T-L-R-Y company. This is page 294. And the reason I'm hesitant to actually recommend anybody pick these up, they're 48 pages listed as a prestige format. But I think they've been doing almost magazine-sized issues. So really, they're kind of like very thin trade paperbacks at this kind of price, but serialized. This is an early solicitation for a book that isn't scheduled to come out until May. So they've got all kinds of weird things with pricing, size, release dates, schedules. For whatever reason, they're hiding all of the cover artists who are going to do the variant covers, even though we already know that this company basically just has the same five artists doing each other's covers. So I don't really understand what they're doing, but I'm intrigued enough by the premise of Eduardo Risso and Brian Azzarello, the team from 100 Bullets, doing a Western that I'm reading this solicitation for you. In the Old West, three children set off across the wild Texas frontier to rescue their mother, kidnapped by ruthless outlaws who gunned down their preacher father. Throughout their journey, they'll face the harsh elements of an unforgiving landscape, deadly animals hungry for blood, merciless bounty hunters, and so much more, all in a relentless quest to rescue their family. They'll learn the terrible cost of revenge, not just in lives, but in how it stains a soul. While revenge may be satisfying in the moment, it leaves a yearning behind that lasts a lifetime. And once you taste it, nothing else is ever so sweet. In the tradition of The Searchers and Blood Meridian comes a brutal new Western series from the Eisner Award-winning team behind 100 Bullets and Moonshine. Again, it sounds interesting, but everything else about this whole project, I can't specifically recommend. This is Nick with a pick from the main previews catalog. This is from page 306 in the Fantagraphics section. I had highlighted the first of the volumes that they were doing as part of this Atlas Comics library, maybe about 6 months ago, and I believe that it just came out maybe November, December, the Adventures into Terror series. But here, Fantagraphics is releasing their second volume, and that is the Atlas Comics Library number 2, Venus, Volume 2. Now, I'm not 100% certain why they are starting with Volume 2, maybe something having to do with the publication history of that particular title. Either way, this is a $49.99 hardcover collection, and it's not gigantic oversized, but this is a little bit larger than standard hardcover. 280 pages. It says, in the late 1940s, the first half of the Venus series was published as a lighthearted romance comic about the goddess Venus taking a job at a beauty magazine. Soon, science fiction elements were introduced, and eventually Venus's dating adventures turned into straight-out horror. Collected here the first time ever, is that swift-changing second half of the 19-issue run. Well, there we go. That answers my question. Future Marvel stars Bill Everett and Werner Roth seize the opportunity, creating 20 ghoulish masterpieces, including classics like Hangman's House, The Day Venus Vanished, The House of Terror, The Sealed Spectres, Tidal Wave of Terror, and The Phantasmagorical Cartoonist's Calamity. I think for what you're getting here, this is definitely high quality. I haven't read through the Adventures into Terror series one yet, but I did, when it arrived, I did take a chance to read the first story or two there, and they do a good job presenting the art and reproducing the stories. So I think if you are interested in that era, or if you just want a collection of 1950s sci-fi horror, this might be the place to pick up a nice volume. Again, $49.99. It doesn't have a specific release day, but I'm assuming that this should probably come out somewhere in March or April.
Hey, this is James here with my final pick in the previews catalog, and this time I'm on page 411, and I am in the manga section with Viz Media, and I'm looking at Alice in Borderland, Volume 9, and there's a big sticker on here that makes me really sad. It's the last time I can call this out. It is the final volume of Alice in Borderland. I've been telling you guys to pick this up. Can't recommend it enough. If you've never tried manga, this is the one to pick up. This is the one to try. And it's sadly coming to an end. But on Netflix, you can watch the live action show, which is fantastic. My sister, this got her into manga. So people who don't like manga, this got her into it. The story and art is by Haro Aso. And I'll read you the solicit. After stumbling upon a secret dealer's table, or bunker, sorry. My mind automatically is gambling, but it's not gambling. But there is gamification in here. So, okay, after stumbling upon a secret dealer's bunker, Harisu is even more determined to uncover the terrible truth behind Borderland. But that means he and Usagi will have to abandon their plans to sit out the games and instead seek one of the last people who might have the answers, the Queen of Hearts. Will taking on the Queen get them any closer to finding their way home? Or will it be their final game? Price, $22.99, so $23, but you get a nice discount through Eric over at Deep Discount Comics. But for this, you get over 400 pages of material. It is fantastic. I can't recommend this enough. It's a manga that I think I'll revisit again. That's how much I enjoyed it. It's a terrific series. A guy taken to a fantastical world where people are forced to play in games. Games of life or death, most of the time. And building coalitions. Who do you trust? Can you trust people? What forces them to play the games? why people would betray others. All these things kind of come to light through the games that are played in this world where people are just trying to survive. So it's almost like survival horror without it being too horrifying, if that makes sense. Fantastic series. I will miss it. Goodbye, Alice in Borderland. I did want to say thank you to John for doing the editing and hosting this. And I want to thank everybody out there who does send in clips. And I will see you guys in the book club, and I'll see you on the Slack. Until next month, talk to you later. Bye.
I hope everybody found something of interest in the pre-order catalogs this month. I want to thank James, Billy, Brawlinator, and Nicholas for sending in clips. This would have been a much shorter episode without them, and it would have been a much longer episode if other people had sent in clips. We've got an open submission policy on these preview spotlight episodes, and I would love to get some more voices and opinions on comics in these episodes. Sending in a clip is as easy as recording it on your computer or smartphone and sharing it with me through Dropbox or email. If you want to send in a single clip, that's fine. I just want more people to participate. Because at one point, all I had was clips from James, because Billy, Brawlinator, Nicholas hadn't got theirs in just yet. And it did make me start to wonder, you know, we're nearly 200 of these episodes. Has the concept played itself out? I mean, obviously people are going to be a little busy over the holidays and stuff like that, but the deadline is the second Saturday of the month. You've got plenty of time to send in clips once you've got the order forms and catalogs and stuff like that. And don't feel like you've got to wait for the catalog to come in. If you can't figure out the page number and stuff like that, just let me know. As long as I have a clear indication of what the items are, I can figure that out. But I do want to get some more people participating in this. And if you want to know when the next deadline is, you can always check out the main page of the Comic Book Page website for the latest information on the deadlines and to sign up for email reminders. Now, the deadline for preview spotlight number 195, covering the February solicitations, is going to be that second Saturday in February, which is February 10th, 2023, and the deadline is 9 a.m. Central Time. If you need a little bit more time, email me, message me on the Slack channel or forum, let me know. I can work with that. I just need to know that I've got to wait for that last couple of clips or whatever, and I'm happy to do that if you just need a little more time. And one other note, I did make some minor changes to the naming convention, specifically pulling the image items out to the image catalog so they've got a prefix of an I, and reminding people that if you're picking something that is not the first item on the page, to include the number for the item on the page in there. So the naming convention, I've got a nice little graphic that I'm adding into the emails I send out. It's also in the forum post, and it just outlines that the first character is what catalog it's coming from. D for DC, M for Marvel, I for Image, P for previews, for Diamond Previews, N for Next Phase, U if it's uncatalogued, and then I'm adding in an X thing that'll go kind of at the end, where if you want to do like a thank you or sign off kind of a clip that'll go after like all the item clips, you can do that. If you want to include it with your last clip, that's fine too. But then that second part of the naming convention is a 4-digit page number. Then there's an optional dash and the item number. If you leave that out, it'll assume it's the first item on the page. But if it's not, that kind of confuses things if other people pick other items on the page, because I'm trying to get this in a consistent order. So if there are multiple things for the same item, they go together. When you put in the description of the item, please include the full name. If it's the comic book, definitely include the issue number. And if it's trade paperback, absolutely include if it's a hardcover, softcover, and the volume number. Because sometimes I've got to dig through the catalog and figure out, well, which item is this really, so somebody looking at it in the catalog can find it accurately. And it doesn't take time for an item, but it takes time for, you know, 30 or 40 or more items. And obviously include your name and stuff. Again, there's a little graphic in there for the naming convention. It's really not hard to figure out and do, and it saves me so much time. Because these episodes take a little while to put together, and some of it is just the minutia of, oh, somebody set in a stereo track clip, so I've got to go split it to mono, get rid of one of the tracks. Oh, I've got to go rename this. Renaming the thing, I've got to pick where in the process I do it. So what I end up with is a series of clips. Once correctly named, I can throw them in Audacity, sort them by name, and everything works out wonderfully. So it's just a little behind-the-scenes stuff. But don't worry about that. If it's your first time sending in clips, I'm willing to work with you and stuff. And I definitely want more people sending in clips. We're just getting down to the regulars and stuff. We only had four of them this time because, you know, life gets in the way for everybody, and I get it. But if you've never sent in a clip and you really enjoy these episodes, please participate. Because part of what I get out of these episodes is a better understanding of what you all are reading and interested in, and that does kind of influence what I pick for back issue spotlights and the like. So, anyways, with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.